Tapes and Scouts, a podcast where two friends review every single movie they watch.
Welcome, everybody, to Capes and Scouts. Tapes and Scouts, that's the one, where we talk about the movies and shit.
Hey, listen, there are scowls involved.
So many.
That's the brand. Whatever you talk about, just make sure you're scowling when you do. I'll talk about it, begrudgingly.
Yeah, I'll tell you this movie's fine.
That's right, unless
it's not, but I definitely have a face like I smell a turd.
That's right.
Maybe I do.
That's the key.
That's right. Well, Max, I guess I'll go first.
Yeah, I've been just going first like crazy lately.
You love to just like, I got this, and dive right in. But you know what? Not today, friend.
Not today. You beat me to it. But that's good, because there's no segue, so I'm all good.
Yeah, we don't need segues.
No.
We just need movies.
We can't even afford a scooter, so certainly can't afford a segue.
We could kind of rig a scooter, maybe like put a wrapping paper roll like on a skateboard.
No, we tried that, remember?
Yeah, we broke. God.
You probably don't remember because you blacked out for a long time.
Well, I remember because my leg was in very weird positions. Like, I didn't know it could point in every direction.
Yeah, no, and it got gangrenous.
It sure did. And that it's gone now. So, yeah. Hey.
Hey, who needs a leg?
That's what I'm saying.
Yay.
This is an audio podcast. I got a leg up on everybody. I still got my pipes.
Yeah, that is correct.
Don't need no leg pipes. I got mouth pipes.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yay.
Why did we get weird after I said I'd start? All right, here we go. My first movie's called Don't Worry, Darling.
Don't worry, darling. I have no leg.
Don't worry, darling. It's just a leg. Don't worry, darling. It's from 2022. I watched this on the 23rd of October. It's 2 hours, 3 minutes. Genre drama mystery thriller, directed by the Olivia Wilde.
Mm.
Starring Florence Pugh.
Pugh.
Harry Styles, and Chris Pine.
It's quite a cast.
It is. Your IMDb movie summary. While her husband leaves home every day to work at a top secret facility, a young 1950s housewife begins to question her life when she notices strange behavior from the other wives in the neighborhood. So, funny story, this movie. I said something very funny while watching this without my glasses on. I turn to the wife, I go, look at this motherfucker thinking he's Harry Styles.
That's great.
She's like, I'm pretty sure that is Harry Styles. I was like, that ain't Harry Styles. Look at this motherfucker thinking he could be all Harry Styles-like.
That's great.
Yeah, it was pretty good. But this movie is a bizarre movie. It is definitely high on the drama. You don't know what's going on, and you definitely start to have that like fear cage kind of effect by the end where you're kind of going nuts, stir crazy and nuts along with Florence Pugh. Who is married to Harry Styles in this movie. So it's very much a cul-de-sac in the middle of nowhere. You aren't sure what's going on, but you get the idea that we're in around the 50s, and you also feel like maybe they're testing weapons or something. They're out in the middle of like the desert, and all the men leave and the women stay home and basically day drink. They don't really even know for sure what their husbands do, so they all just disappear and come back at night. It's a very bizarre thing. Chris Pine is very good in this. He's kind of like the leader of the community, and you're like, okay, is this a cult, or is this a legit work thing, or is this something just fucking completely different? We just have no idea. But his performance is so good, and it's kind of like he's controlling these people, and it starts to feel very cult-like as the movie develops. Very cool concept, gets really, really weird and really dark. There's a lot of rules for the housewives, like you're not allowed to go out in certain areas. Florence Pugh, of course, does, because she sees a plane crash. And she's like, oh no, these people are hurt. I got to drive out there and see if they're okay. And of course, she can't find the plane. She can't find anything. She's very confused. And she wakes up back home in her bed like nothing happened. So you know that there's some foul play involved.
That's wild.
Yeah, it's one of those movies where you either love what it goes to at the end or you're like, eh. But I thought it was pretty cool. Very interesting concept. Big concepts in this movie. Great performances from everybody, though. It also doesn't feel like you just don't know what's real. Everybody's so kind of off. Like Harry Styles, he's one of the higher ups in this company, and he'll come home and like the first thing he does is jump her bones the minute he walks in the door. And I'm like, this is every day for you? Like, what do we do?
Right.
Like, that's not normal. I'm married. I know how this works.
That's right. Who's this guy think he is? Harry Styles?
Yeah, with this Harry. That's probably when I said it. Look at this Harry Styles looking motherfucker. Yeah. Thinking he could just have sex with a wife all the time. Jeez. It's a pretty good movie. I don't want to spoil too much of it, but it is very wordy, very dramatic, very slow moving. I think the payoffs are all worth it, but if that's not your kind of movie, you might want to avoid it.
Fair enough.
Yeah. So IMDb give it a 6.3. The critics, 352 of them, give it 38%. The audience, though, 1,000 plus, they're into it. They give it 74%. And to add to the confusion, my wife, who likes this kind of movie, gave it a 5, and I gave it a 7 out of 10.
Wow.
So I think a lot of this depends on the reveals of this movie and if you're still in or not.
That seems reasonable to me.
Yeah, I was surprised that the numbers were that all over the place.
Yeah, seriously.
But yeah, it's a good one.
Like it or hate it.
Like it or hate it, it is Harry Styles.
It is.
Confirmed.
Okay, well, on October 23rd, while you were watching this, I was busy watching a film from 1998.
Ooh.
It is Scooby-Doo on Zombie Island.
Oh, man, we gotta get out of here, Scoob.
Exactly. It is 1 hour and 18 minutes. It is a mystery animation film directed by Jim Stenstrom. This is the Tim Plague I have where I wrote my names all crazy.
Yep.
Kazumi Fukushima and Hiroshi Aoyama.
Nice.
Starring Frank Welker, Mary Kay Bergman, and Mark Hamill.
These are all voice acting all-stars.
Yeah, yeah. Heavy hitters for sure. Your movie summary on this one. Scooby and the gang reunite in search of mysteries and adventure when they chance upon a remote island inhabited by an undead pirate and his zombie crew.
Undead pirate? Oh, no.
Yeah. So I remember kind of talking over, we were talking over different Scooby-Doo movies, and I said, I think the big, like, the heavy hitter for Scooby-Doo animated movies, like the direct-to-VHS style ones, was surprisingly Zombie Island. And so right. I was like, let's rewatch it. And it was pretty good. It's a tough movie to score for me just because this kind of has the same syndrome you have with really low budget movies where it feels like the constraints that it needs in order to be kind of just your Scooby-Doo style of film butts up with how do I compare this to a movie? Like, I can't compare Scooby-Doo on Zombie Island to, like, Vertigo. Like, it's right. just not going to have, like, what universe am I going to be able to compare these movies, but I have to still put them in a linear rating that makes sense.
It's the curse of being the critic.
Right, like, I think this movie's very well done. I think I have it listed out as a familiar taste, but with a very different feel. So, like, the new Coke of Scooby-Doo, because there is real zombies in this movie. And
real zombies.
It's not just a person in a mask, and they do like the trope where they try to take the mask off of the zombie and they're like, oh, this is not a mask at all. And it's got like these werecat creatures, which is pretty neat. Like, it's really inventive and thoughtful, but at the end of the day, it has to check all the boxes and do all the tropes and the things that are in a Scooby-Doo. So it's kind of bogged down filmically by the fact that it is a Scooby-Doo, but for a Scooby-Doo, it's quite successful. It's just, I think there's a limiting rating I can give a good Scooby-Doo.
Yeah, that does, like you said, that becomes a problem. It's very tricky.
Yeah, it's really tough. It's not like Scoob when I reviewed that and it just wasn't good, so it made my life a lot easier.
You hated that thing.
Yeah, that thing was poop soup, but this was actually like a good, like if somebody's just like, I've never heard of Scooby-Doo, or I've only heard of Scooby-Doo. What should I watch to give me an idea of what Scooby-Doo is? To recommend, of course, like Scooby-Doo, Where Are You? And then when you're done, this is a really good one because they did a bunch of animated ones. Largely the movies you can avoid the bulk of. But this, I remember being a really good one. And I recall, like, when I watched it, I was like, you know what? Actually holds up pretty well. The animation's decent. Voice cast is insane. The concept is very much in the Scooby-Doo universe, but also takes it in a slightly different direction, thoughtfully adds to it, really good. But again, at the end of the day, it's like, but it's a Scooby-Doo. Like, it's not doing anything interesting. As a film, right. If I had never seen Scooby-Doo, it's just like, this is a movie about a group of young teens or early adults who take a talking dog and solve a mystery. I'd be like, it was not very good for a movie. So it was tricky to review in that way. IMDb gives it a 7.7 out of 10.
Okay.
Rotten Tomatoes critics, 8 critics, 88%.
Whoa.
The audience, 25,000 plus, went back to review Scooby-Doo on Zombie Island and gave it 79%.
Wow, this is all great.
Yeah, I just don't think I can give it that high of a rating, so I gave it a 6.5 out of 10, kind of, I think, the high watermark number for a Scooby-Doo animated film trying to be Scooby-Doo.
They got to try harder. They got to win you over.
Right. Like, it's like if they were doing something deeper and really diving into these heavy themes and concepts and ideas, like, this is lovely, and it has this kind of very nice, cathartic warmness at the end of it. It just is a Scooby-Doo, and it's just not trying to do anything more than that. So an awesome Scooby-Doo, but a Scooby-Doo nonetheless.
There it is. I think that's fair, for sure.
That's the best I got anyway.
Well, I think your best is good enough.
Oh, thanks.
You're welcome. Speaking of good enough, here we go. You ready?
Woohoo!
We got an anime.
Oh, anime.
An anime from 1983.
Oh.
But it got released over here somewhere in that 90s glut of anime that I like.
Indeed.
This is Golgo 13, The Professional.
Okay. I'm familiar with this.
Yes, this had a Nintendo game. There's multiple movies. This character has been used multiple times.
Yep.
You may have seen this character and not even realized you've seen him. So I watched this on the 26th of October. It's an hour 34 animation action crime directed by Osamu Dezaki, starring Tetsuro Sagawa, Goro Naya, and Toshiko Fujita. Your IMDb movie summary. After killing the son of a powerful oil tycoon, an infamous hitman is targeted by American governmental forces and superhuman killers. So, Max, have you seen this one?
I think I've seen bits of it. I'm familiar with it.
Okay. So, he is insanely badass. They always portray him as just like this untouchable hitman, and if he's put on your case, you're dead. There's just no getting out of it. So the whole thing is the American government takes notice of him after he does this hit, and they're like, we got to take this guy out. He's too powerful. He's too good. He needs to be taken off the board. So that's what they're trying to do. And at the same time, you have the father, the oil tycoon himself, who has, of course, a lot of crime ties, and he is definitely a scumbag, and he is working with other forces to try to take him down. At no point does he ever feel safe. They really come at him hard this entire movie. Golgo 13 has a few contacts. If you know him, you're probably dead. And basically, he gets put in different situations throughout this movie where you're like, well, he's a good hitman. He's like a sniper is what he usually is. So it's like, oh, man, this woman tries to seduce him and then tries to kill him. Like, she fucks him up pretty good. And it's like, well, yeah, because he's usually a sniper. So it's got that going for it. It has kind of a James Bond feel to it. Like, he's suave. Everybody wants to be him. All the women want to be with him. That kind of thing. There is a really awesome scene in this, which I think the whole movie is worth it just for this scene. It's a hit. I won't explain the hit because I won't tell you where it takes place in this movie, where he is surrounded by the Japanese police, the American forces that are helping out. It's this impossible shot that he's trying to make. And the animation of the bullet going from where he is to the target is awesome.
Ooh, that's pretty cool.
Yeah, it's really cool because they're like, well, he can't. We have everything covered, all the places he could be, and they can't find him. And they're like, well, he's not where we think he is. Where is he? And he does this crazy shot. But the animation follows the bullet as it goes through different panes of glass, through different buildings, and ultimately it makes it to the target. I won't tell you if he's successful or not, but it is this amazing animation of like going through buildings, seeing people like hear it but not able to see it, and like just kind of like how much thought was put into this weird, any other movie it would have been a throwaway kind of scene, this shot that he takes. And I was like, man, this is like one of the best things I've ever seen animated ever.
I love when they really take advantage of the fact that it's like animated. It's an animated medium. So it's like we can do something that they just couldn't do this in live action, especially at the time.
Right. Especially at the time. And the animation's gorgeous. I think this is one because I know I really like these 90s releases, and I think it's hit or miss probably for some people, but I think this one, if you're into James Bond kind of stories, if you're into like this anti-hero James Bond, that's kind of what he is. And I think this is a must see for any anime fan.
Nice.
So IMDb, they gave it a 6.8, a little better than normal.
Just a little.
Just a little. Interestingly enough, Rotten Tomatoes, both the critics and the audience, there are not enough scores in. I checked both the English version and the Japanese version, and it was the same thing. There were no scores for it, which I thought was bizarre. And I fall in line, man. It's a 7 out of 10. Movie's solid.
Nice. It's exciting.
Yeah, it's super good.
Very cool. And also a good reason to, for you, all of you out there, to make sure that you subscribe to the podcast so that we can get on to Rotten Tomatoes and put more of these reviews in.
Yeah.
Fuckers.
Yeah, you bastards.
I have a movie from 2015.
Oh, yeah?
It is Goosebumps.
Oh, it's about geese?
Yes, it is.
Sick.
They run into people.
Oh, no.
I watched this on October 30th, 2023. It's 1 hour and 43 minutes. It's a horror comedy directed by Rob Letterman, starring Jack Black, Odiah Rush, and Dylan Minnette.
Okay.
The movie summary here is a teenager teams up with the daughter of a children's horror author, R.L. Stine, after the writer's imaginary demons set free on the town of Madison, Delaware. That is my handwriting. I've been getting lazy because Sam's been writing these descriptions for me, and here I am writing them for myself, like some kind of a peasant, and they're terrible.
Oh, it's awful. Just awful.
So this movie's kind of interesting. It takes the concept of R.L. Stine having written this Goosebumps series, and he lives as a recluse in Delaware, and a new kid moves in next door and sees that he has a daughter, and they start talking, and they hang out in the house, and accidentally knock some of his books off the shelf, like the original Goosebumps manuscripts or whatever, and it frees the character within it, and they free the Abominable Snowman of Pasadena, and then in trying to get it back into the book, they have to kind of open the book and get it into the book. They manage to do it, but it also frees a bunch of other characters from various other manuscripts, and things kind of snowball out from there. So essentially, R.L. Stine then walks in and is like, oh my god, you're idiots. I'm Jack Black. And then they have to kind of recapture all of these monsters, which includes Slappy, the dummy from Night of the Living Dummy, as kind of the mastermind behind everything. And it's cool. It feels kind of like a love letter to Goosebumps in a way, where it's doing a lot of what Goosebumps do, where it's like, you know, kind of titular young adolescent characters who have to overcome something that's like scary adjacent, like very gateway horror-y kind of stuff.
Right.
So it was fun. Soundtrack's pretty good. The acting's fun. It's energetic. It does its thing. It doesn't quite ring the same bells I look for when I'm going back, you know, kind of hoping that we would just get more of a Goosebumps on the big screen treatment. This is not that. So if that's what you're looking for, you're not going to get it, but you are going to get some of the very familiar kind of R.L. Stine versions of characters. You'll get the, like, Werewolf of Fever Swamp, you'll get scarecrows, you'll get mummies, you'll get Slappy, you'll get monster blood. Like, you get all the stuff. Nice. But it's just kind of like, and that's a good way, I mean, it makes sense, right, for modern audiences. You like, oh, I like this, maybe my kid will like this. So they can kind of go watch it together because the kids don't need the backstories or have read the books in any meaningful way. You just need to know that this R.L. Stine character was a children's horror author and they treat him as such, and there you go.
I hope it got some kids to read. That's all I want.
Right? Like, it's just, you know, I need that book fair money. This was it, man. I try to make my pockets as fat as I could for book fair day to get them Goosebumps.
That's right.
I needed the books. I needed the posters. I needed the board games. Like, I needed all of it.
That's right.
Like, Mom, I don't have enough for all of this and a Lamborghini poster and a 3D pop-out eye poster. And I need those.
The Lamborghini poster was a staple.
You had to have it. I had to have it. I had the book on tying knots, because tying knots in the 90s was really cool for some reason.
That's true.
Like, I'm doing all these tricks with strings in my hand. Can you fathom it?
Who knew it would turn into a fetish later?
You know, we should have saw it coming.
Should have.
IMDb gives this a 6.3 out of 10. Rotten Tomato critics. 167 critics watched this film. They gave it a 78%.
Okay.
The audience of 50,000 plus, a little bit more curmudgeonly, probably like myself, 50,000, not. They gave it a 62.
Okay.
So pretty good scores, right? 6.62, 6.3, 78. And I'm right in the middle, 6.5 out of 10. So it's a fun watch. It's not going to win any awards. It's probably not going to be super duper memorable outside of like, hey, Jack Black was in that, right? But
that's what I also said.
Yeah, also wasn't bad, you know? Like, it wasn't like, I was like, ugh, like, I'm really sad that they made this, and they call it Goosebumps because it sucked. That's not the case either. So I know there's a sequel. I'm hoping that that is also acceptable.
I just like that the Abominable Snowman is the one who made it snowball out of control, and I like that yeah. you said that.
Yep, it's neat, and it's fun, and it's, I mean, there's nothing wrong with it. I don't think anybody would sit down and be like, I'm very sad I watched this film, including a Goosebumps and Lamborghini poster aficionado like myself.
All tied in knots.